Welcome to Covenant Presbyterian Church in West Des Moines, Iowa. This educational offering is part of our mission to bless our neighbors to the glory of God. We hope it blesses you.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Welcome to this final installment of Neighborhood Church, transforming your congregation into a
powerhouse for a mission.
See?
Wow.
Is that exciting or what?
Is that getting
this really hits the blood pumping.
Yeah. Powerhouse.
Powerhouse. Okay, so last week in our conversation about space, we talked about familiarity. And the authors were reminding us that familiarity... they say it's not that familiarity breeds contempt. Familiarity breeds a sense of ownership. An antiquated, they said, sense of ownership. And what we need is this sense of openness and sharing and partnership with those around us. And I said, as we were talking about the difference between our relationship with our residential neighborhoods and our relationship with the church, that in our residential neighborhoods, we get familiar with sort of our routine, right? The way we go through our day, if we pull out of our driveway, you ever do the thing where you pull out of your driveway, but you had to go the other direction this time, and you forgot, right? In the time it took you to back down the driveway, you forgot which direction to turn because you always turn the other way. And that depends on where you live on the block, whether that example is relevant to you. Because if you live, there are certain places on a given block where you really do go either direction. But a lot of us, we're always going the same direction. We've sort of worn a little groove in the floor because this is where we go and what we do. We have actually a different relationship to each other at church, partly because we have practices that keep us unfamiliar in certain ways. Over time, even those practices can become ways to be overly familiar with each other, right? In ways that make us unable to sort of open the weave and let someone else in, right? But we have practices like sharing prayer requests with each other. Because if I'm up to speed on not only what's going on in your life, but like what's going on in your kids' in-laws' lives, right? That keeps me open to recognizing the way that life continues to change in each of our lives. So it's not just like, my world is more difficult to navigate, even though I've got this little groove that I go back and forth in. But actually, all of our lives are pretty complicated. And the way that we share the developments of life with each other actually helps us not to fall completely into a place of complacency with each other. We're going to talk about practices today. We're going to talk specifically about the practices, the church is talking, or the book is talking about practices in church that keep sort of the vitality of the church as a missional community. So practices of worship and practices of prayer, practices of leadership development that keep revitalizing who we are as we are in relationship with our neighbors. And again, we're talking about in this particular context, we're talking about the church when it goes back to the places it sleeps at night, which is you being the church in your neighborhoods. So if you thought last week was hard to translate, this week's going to be very hard to translate. Except that We believe that God is present everywhere in every moment of our lives. And so we're going to try to talk into how do we recognize where God is and what God is doing at all of these different moments in our lives. So the video will talk to us about worship, and you're going to think about relationships with your neighbors. Couple of sentences, even just one sentence here on page 97, talking about worship leaders. Every aspect of our services, every song, prayer, and sacrament, has the singular purpose of leading people into the presence of the living God. Everything we do as church, so I'll generalize from just worship as a specific piece of our life together as church, everything we do as church should really have one purpose, which is to awaken us to the living presence of God in our world. Have you ever had a conversation with someone in your neighborhood that, as you were present in that conversation, you realized, recognized, remembered, oh, God is here in this conversation? Have you ever had an interaction in your neighborhood that awakened you to the presence of God in your neighborhood? No. Interesting. So we're going to have to think about how we can become attentive to the presence of God in our neighborhood. Because this is a theological claim that I can back up with scripture and Reformed theology, right? God is already present in your neighborhood, right? God is already there. God is already active and working for the redemption of the world, even in your neighborhood. And if you open your eyes to it, or ask the Holy Spirit to open your eyes to it, then you get to be part of that in ways that you may not have realized you could. So it's those practices that help open our eyes to where God is present in our neighborhood that we're going to talk about today. The ways that this works are really through paying attention to the way that God is present, not sort of in some big abstract kind of way, but the ways that God is present in the really particular details of your neighborhood, in the really particular details of the ways that people interact with each other, the ways that people depend on each other, the ways that that you and your neighbors are both able to contribute to the life that you share together. So, again, I'm about to show you a video that's all about worship, but it's about worship in a really contextual sense, looking at how do we worship right where we are. So I'm going to invite you to watch this, and then we will do some translating.
Rob Mueller, one of the co-authors of Neighborhood Church, and welcome to Chapter 5, Sustaining the Vision. You know, many church leaders pay a very high price trying to navigate the waters of cultural change and help their churches into new paradigms and new ways of being. And once you get into those new paradigms, it's hard to sustain the energy to be able to keep them going. We've discovered that one of the most important things in sustaining that vision is the importance of passionate worship and the ability to keep people connected to a living experience of the living presence of God. We're here at Shepherd of the Hills Presbyterian Church today, and they are known in our presbytery for being one of the churches that has very, very high energy and spirit-filled worship. And I'd like for you to hear what their pastor, Leon Bloder, and their worship arts director, Beth Watson, have to say about what they do here at Shepherd of the Hills to sustain the vision through passionate worship.
An interesting church. It's not a terribly old church. It was actually founded in the 1980s. And our DNA here is very casual. It's informal, and it's a very kind of Austin-y crowd.
When we say Austin-y, I mean that we need to unpack that. because this is a particularly interesting place. It's a melting pot of a lot of different people from different backgrounds, and also our church is, I would consider it kind of a purple church in a lot of ways. We have people from all, sort of theological, political, those kinds of backgrounds and points of view, but it works. And I think the approach that we have where we are uniquely sort of us in whatever we do, whether it's in our casual worship service or in our traditional worship service, it's definitely, it fits our particular context.
And we're a church that doesn't pay attention to trends. So we don't try to do a thing that isn't us because we think it will make us grow or that it will attract people. We try to live fully into our sort of our authentic incarnation of being the church in this time and place.
The key is authentic. So when you're queuing in on authentic, then some of the things that you are wanting to happen, that your church would be vibrant and thrive, and that people would be drawn to be a part of the family of faith, those things happen out of authenticity.
Yeah, out of relationship.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, we definitely use a variety of media and all kinds of different means to communicate that and to live sort of authentically into what we see as our calling to be the church. I mean, we say that we love God and love everybody, and that's something that we communicate in a variety of ways as well. You immediately go to our website, and the first thing that you see is love God, love everybody. We want that to be a message that is conveyed, that this is a place where all are welcome, and we really want to live into that.
Leon and I think and talk with one another about the theology of all of these pieces. We don't just do it because it's fun or cool. And so one of the reasons why we incorporate non-explicitly Christian music in our worship is that all of life is sacred. All of God, all of life is for God to be in the midst of. And we don't have our Sunday morning persona and then the rest of our lives.
Right.
And so we want life of faith to permeate everything about everybody in our congregation.
Absolutely.
We want it to permeate their jobs and their family lives and the way they drive and the way they shop. And so we want to model that here in our communal worship together so that people have the opportunity to invite God into all that they are, the messy and the clean and the good and the bad and the everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
And also to recognize that God is present even when we aren't saying Jesus Christ. God is in the midst of all of creation. God is in the midst of all of beauty, all of love. All those things are of God. And so we don't want people to feel like that the Christian life should be lived in a bubble.
Right.
We want people to embrace God's presence in every part of who they are.
So I think that some people fear change because they worry that somehow the message is going to be lost if it's conveyed in a different way. And that's something that we strive very hard to make sure that
that's the piece that doesn't change.
It doesn't change. I remember having a conversation with a dear lady who was asking me, why do we change this, or why do we have to do this? And my response was, well, you know, we need to change some things, or, you know, we're going to die. You know, we have to still remain authentic within our context, and the context around us has changed.
Sustaining the vision for a congregation that seeks to adapt itself to the context that is constantly changing around us is not easy. It requires passionate and engaging worship that keeps us connected to the living presence of God, that motivates us and keeps us supported as we navigate what are very difficult waters sometimes. It also requires leadership that is willing to be flexible and adaptable to the things that change around them, both within the church and outside of the church. If we're going to be faithful to the message of Jesus Christ, we have to learn how to be flexible in the ways in which we proclaim that message. I hope this chapter will help you in being able to identify some of those ways that can benefit your congregation and its life as you seek to be a good neighbor in the midst of your community.
So like I said, all sort of living directly in the context of how does church do this very churchy, structured worship thing, right? But what were the important parts that they highlighted about how Shepherd of the Hills Presbyterian Church does their very churchy, structured worship thing? What mattered about that?
Contact with other people.
Be in contact with other people. And which other people specifically?
Well, it's about everybody.
Yeah, and everybody where?
In the neighborhood.
In the neighborhood. Yeah. And so they described their worship as Austin-y, right? Like Austin is its own little sort of cultural musical scene, right? So they try to worship Austin-y. And yet, what's happening, what is the thing they do in worship? What is the proclamation at the center of their worship?
God.
God loves everybody.
God loves everybody. We love God, we love everybody. Jesus Christ is here to reconcile and redeem everybody. You know, that's at the core of who they are. So they're not like, oh, I've got to go figure out what Austin's up to, and I'm going to forget that what I'm here to do is to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ. And because they're so firmly rooted in proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ, they can be open to whatever it is Austin happens to be up to right now. Not to try to compete with it, right? But to be open to the ways that contextualizes the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because the gospel always happens in a specific setting, among a specific community. And the whole story of Jesus' ministry and the ministry of the early church is the story of the gospel figuring out what it looks like in a given setting. It looks like one thing in Galilee. It looks like a different thing when you're across the lake in the Decapolis. It looks like another thing when you're in Syrophoenicia. It looks like another thing when you go across to Macedonia. And it keeps not changing, but it looks like it changes because it sits within and transforms the culture it finds itself in conversation with. So here's the next move that I'm going to make, and I'm not going to ask your permission to make this move. But the next move I'm going to make is to remind you that you are all ambassadors of Jesus Christ wherever you go, which means when you go home, you go home on behalf of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the gospel, that same thing that they do in their particular Austin-y way there, that we do in our particular covenant way here, has to look West Des Moines-y, or Clivey, or Johnston-y, or Des Moines-y. Yeah. So the way that they do this at Shepherd of the Hills is they look at what's Austin like, right? What's Austin-y about Austin? And they do that's them, right? What's West Des Moines-y about your neighborhood? What's Des Moines-y about your neighborhood? Or Johnston-y, or Clivey, or, what's locally distinctive about your neighborhood? And this can be stuff you like or stuff you don't like, but what's identifiably local about your neighborhood?
We don't see much of our neighbors until spring.
Yeah, so there's a rhythm to the year.
There's definitely, because I was thinking about the difference, because I know Austin. My daughter lives there, so.
Oh, great, yeah.
But it's easy to be outdoors in Austin.
Yeah.
All year round. In fact, in the wintertime, it's really good to be outdoors.
Right.
In summer, maybe too hot. But,
yeah.
So I have picnics and so forth. That's easy to do.
Yeah, and so the particular rhythms of the year, and, something can be West Des Moines without being like exclusively West Des Moines, right? But you can see a difference in the rhythm of the year between West Des Moines and Austin, where, as Tom says, it's easier to be out in the winter in Austin, it's easier to be out in the summer in Des Moines, and so the way that sort of the energy changes in spring, that's unique. That's distinctive as a local feature. What else is West Des Moines-y, or substitute the name of your municipality, about your neighborhood?
Well, we've mentioned this before. There's not a lot of stay-at-home moms with kids and several of the mothers out socializing while their husbands used to be at work. I've seen that transition, and some of us in this room have. And it seemed like then that was the natural inclination that the women planned something because they had the opportunity. So I'm not sure. I don't know my neighbors real well. But I think from Giles to Meadow Lane, I'm not sure if there's more than three or four stay-at-home moms.
So this is one of those differences, right? This is like sharing the prayer requests among the congregation that keeps us a little bit unfamiliar with each other, right? Because it keeps us open to something has changed in your life, whether that's a prayer request for your grandson, or whether it's your sister-in-law, or somebody from back home that we have sort of these extra connections, and so that helps us stay attentive to the changes in our lives. This change, the change from the neighborhood being sort of staffed during the day by the stay-at-home moms, to the neighborhood is not staffed during the day by the stay-at-home moms, which doesn't mean there aren't people around, right? But retirees tend to stay inside more than kids do, and so you don't have that same mixing. That doesn't mean people aren't there, but noticing that difference is actually a way to pray for your neighbors, right? Because you can also picture, particularly those of you for whom both parents out working and the kids are doing whatever the kids are doing, which is usually in some professional environment for longer during the day than say I was in a professional environment growing up. You can picture, you may not have all of the details of how this is different, but you can picture that's different, right? you can picture some of the needs that may be there. You can even pray for those needs. You're allowed to pray for your neighborhood. This is one of the primary ways you can be church in your neighborhood. Praying for your neighbors actually changes your relationship to them. So if you're like, wow, you know, both parents are off to work all the time and those kids, boy, you know, God, I really hope that those kids have the adults that they need at the times that they need them in their life, you know? And then don't be too surprised if then God is like, hey, you might want to go be one of those adults in that kid's life, but, you know, that's not the only way God can answer that prayer. It's just a likely one. So, but yeah, being attentive to, that's something that has changed in a lot of our neighborhoods during the time that a lot of us have lived in them.
Just as a follow-up comment to that, too, the kids didn't have the inside-the-home entertainment options that they've got now, and the kid was getting kind of bored with what was going on at home. Well, go out, you know, get out of here and find some of your neighbors and entertain yourself. Or now they're self-contained. They got so many electronic choices. So you would have neighbors coming over, knocking on the door, or can Mike come out, or can Karen come out, you know, because their parents said, well, go get out of here. And now I think the kids are so self-contained. And see, it all goes, see where it goes back. It's a common thing here. It's kids.
And if they do get together, they're still on that.
Well, today they do, but you know, I'd have neighborhood kids coming in, taking a break, drinking Kool-Aid and eating graham crackers at my kitchen table. Mm-hmm. So I'd get to know, they weren't maybe there very long, and then my kids were gone, they were somebody else's kitchen eating graham crackers, you know.
Well, I'm talking about the change. If they do get together,
so,
they're still on
sure.
the electronics.
So, so this is what's contemporary about our neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Right, and so one of the ways to be attentive to your neighborhood is to be attentive to the ways things have changed over time, and get to know why things have changed over time, the ways that kids are and are not sort of out wandering in packs. What would you do if you saw a pack of kids like your kids used to do? If you saw a group of kids walking down your street today, what would you do?
Lock your door.
Yeah. Would you have done that 40 years ago? So what's different there? It's not the kids. So that's a contemporary change, right? That's what's contemporary about your neighborhood. That's actually not so different. It's not so distinctive about our suburban neighborhoods, and most of us are in suburban neighborhoods to the extent that I know where y'all live.
I would comment, in my neighborhood, it's an association, so even in the summer when it's nice, someone else, some, you know, company,
outside contractor.
Yes, they do the yard, and in the winter they shovel the snow, so people aren't even out doing those things that a lot of, which is one way people get to know each other.
Yeah, so that is something distinctive. So if you're thinking about how to be a better neighbor, in Ann's neighborhood, you can't be a better neighbor by going over and trimming someone else's hedges for them, right? Because the union won't let you. There's no union.
Association.
But the association won't have you out there doing yard work. Yeah. Which is, you know, has benefits and drawbacks, but that's distinctive about your neighborhood. In my neighborhood, everybody's doing their own yard work. So there's a distinctive. What else is distinctive? Identifiably Johnston-y about your neighborhood.
We have a neighborhood that's made up of 30 townhomes.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure half of those may be gone south for the winter.
Oh, they really don't know.
Driveways are still plowed.
Yeah. So, the physical structure of your neighborhood and the does the association clear the driveways? So the snow plowing contract means that you don't necessarily see, oh, who's there and who's not, because the snow gets cleared regardless. So that invites a different kind of attentiveness, right? If you're in a neighborhood where that doesn't happen, again, I'm in a neighborhood where that doesn't happen. The house next to me has been vacant for most of the winter, and there's work being done on it so it can be rental property. And so now the driveway is clear, but for a good chunk of the winter, the driveway was not clear. I happened to know why because I live next door. If you are in a neighborhood where the driveways don't just get plowed and you notice a neighbor's driveway is not getting plowed, boy, that sounds like an invitation to pray for and or get to know your neighbor, right? What's going on? You're allowed to be nosy. It's okay. Yeah. So knowing those pieces of context, that matters. Something else that is West Des Moines and Johnston-y and Clive-y about a lot of your neighborhoods is, Warren mentioned that if you've got two parents at home, they're not at home during the daytime. Where are they? They're at work. And where do they go to work?
Downtown.
A lot of them go downtown. And where do a lot of the rest of them go?
Wells Fargo.
The big corporate campuses that are not downtown, but that are out here on the edge. And that changes how people interact with each other, right? It even just changes what direction they're driving, depending on what kind of work it is. It can even change whether you know when they're going to be home, right? Because some places of employment are more structured than others in terms of when, you know, when people are at work and when people are not. So even the daily rhythm of your neighborhood depends on exactly where you are and who the people are in it. So we know what has changed about your neighborhoods, and we know what some of the things that are distinctive about your neighborhoods. What has not changed about your neighborhood? So this is specifically a question for those of you who have lived in your neighborhood for a good long time. But if you are in a new neighborhood, so it's not that the neighborhood has changed around you, but you have changed the neighborhood, what has stayed the same? What can you look at your neighborhood and say, yeah, this is how it used to be, or this is how I expected it to be? What can you see in your neighborhood that is like that?
At the risk of sounding like Al Siebert, it is traditional to keep your yard looking fairly attractive. Mm-hmm. Anybody that would let it just grow au naturel would probably be shunned.
Uh-huh.
And I think even dandelions have been excluded. It used to be you could get by maybe with some dandelions, but now I think the dandelions are...
That creeping Charlie.
Yes, yes. But when we came, that has remained constant, that keeping the yard respectable.
Yeah. So at least, you know, with some variations on particularly how, that's a context thing, right? But the assumption that you will keep your yard in sort of a general state of presentability, did I get that right?
And the phrase that they keep going back to, if you've got a home that is neglected, it's how's it affecting the property value of those on either side of that neglected property or across the street?
Yeah.
We had just a minor situation with yard kind of being ignored, and that was a thing that the couple across the street, when they were listing their home, insinuated that that property was going to be a detriment to the selling price of their home. Didn't affect me because I wasn't next to her, and I wasn't putting my house on the market.
Right.
But that's when that came up.
Right.
And maybe too much equipment, like a pickup truck and a two-wheel trailer. In West Des Moines, you have to have them sitting on concrete. And once in a while, I've mentioned that to the city of Des Moines, that we've got a vehicle that's on grass, because I do know that law. But so we're still interested in at least, maybe the backyard could be maybe not as well kept, but at least when you drive down the street, the appearance of your yard is acceptable.
So that sort of that suburban tidiness,
yeah,
tidiness is still an expectation, even if the you know, I could imagine the specifically coding that as your vehicle needs to be on concrete. That may be, you know, that may be a new way of doing that, but it's the same expectation. Yeah. Are dandelions and Creeping Charlie acceptable or not? That's a, you know, that's a variation within keep your yard presentable.
One of the neighbors gets out the lawnmower and says, "Oh, our grass grew."
Yeah. Yeah. So this is like it's keeping up with the Joneses, but it's keeping down with the Joneses, right? That you're more likely to feel the need to go mow your lawn if the neighbor's lawn is now shorter than yours.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a piece that has stayed the same. And some of what that is the social pressure, right? Some of it is the keeping your, you know, the expectation that you'll be as tidy as the people around you.
My neighbor was, when I was first moved in, or well, maybe for several years after I moved in, new wife next door, second wife, she would come over and pull weeds and clip my hedge and do things. I mean, she decided, you know, I needed to perk up things. I wasn't keeping them up as...
So then she took matters into her own hands.
Yeah, she'd bring her garbage cans back up and she had too much time on her hands. I had a bigger yard and she... Mm-hmm. Tending to it.
Hey, you know. So, yeah, and so that's even more than a local thing, right? That's an individual, personal thing, and at the same time, it's another expression of what both Warren and Russ were talking about, that the way we keep our space. This is last week, right? The way we keep our space has an impact on those around us. Now, sometimes that's a little superficial, right? Sometimes we don't have to get our nose out of joint over how somebody else is keeping their space. And yet, we are aware in some of these unique ways that what we do has an impact on our neighbors. That what we do has an impact on our neighbors. So, tell me about somebody in your neighborhood who really shows what being a good neighbor is about. Who's somebody in your neighborhood that shows what being a good neighbor is about?
Well, we've got somebody across the street from us who thinks almost anything.
So. Oh, okay.
So in that big mailbox, the door got so it wouldn't work right, and I thought of it. Tear down the brick and get it out. He said, "Oh no, I can fix that out. We just kind of drill out that screw and we rip whatever it was and we get this and we do that." And next thing you know, he had it fixed, you know. So,
oh yeah.
Because I imagine probably everybody in here can probably do that too. I just don't know how to do it. So.
And to be able to think of what the solution is almost harder than being able to carry out the solution. To think, well, I know where the problem is, and you've got a neighbor who could see that this was going on, or could hear in what you were saying that this was going on, and was willing to say, "Hey, well, I can do that." Yeah, Mary.
Well, several years ago, we had a branch come down on a Sunday morning.
Oh.
We just went on to church.
Right.
Came home from church, it was all cleaned up.
Oh, nice.
We know it was the neighbor kept going across the street.
Okay.
And he's helped.
Yeah.
The branches come down and he's been over there.
Right, yeah.
Chainsaw in hand.
Yeah, and so that's another of those things that, you know, I'm guessing there's a difference in that sort of voluntary yard work while you're gone and the voluntary yard work while you're gone that Sue was experiencing.
Right, yes.
Which is that there was already a positive relationship established with that neighbor.
Right.
And so they could assume, and it sounds like they were right about this, that they could do this and it would be appreciated. As opposed to, well, if I run over and do this, maybe they won't notice, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And so there's the context, right? The context of relationship between you that's able to say, this is something that I can do much more easily than Russ and Mary can do it, and I'm not going to church on Sunday morning anyway, so I'll go love my neighbor instead, right? If you're not going to go to church on Sunday morning, at least go love your neighbor. Yeah.
One wintry morning, I woke up and I looked out the window and there was a red pickup at our driveway. I knew whose it was, across the street. So later in the day, he came over to get it. He said, so icy, I couldn't get up my driveway.
Right.
So I knew I could park over there. You wouldn't mind.
Right. Right. So that's, you know, that's pieces of integrating our space too, right? Of knowing that as neighbors, we can depend on each other, we can depend on each other's space, you know, and being able to recognize other people's vehicles helps, right?
Yeah.
That you can know, oh, I know whose truck that is. If I need to get out and the truck's in the way, I know who to call, right? So these are ways of, that was a way that you were a good neighbor without even having planned on it, right? And so we've got these good neighbors already in our neighborhood. Not everybody in our neighborhood is necessarily the kind of neighbor we would want, right? Or is not necessarily the kind of neighbor to us that we would want them to be. But we've got these good neighbors who are already there, right? These are the assets we mapped in our neighborhood. Part of this sustaining the neighborhood is being attentive to where those people are and what those people are doing and encouraging them, right? So what's a way that you can encourage that good neighbor in your neighborhood? Tom, I'm guessing you did something encouraging for that neighbor after he fixed your mailbox.
I had taken a couple of bottles of wine. I don't know. He does things for us. More than, that's the only thing he does at that.
So. Right. Yeah, so remembering the specific encouraging thing you did after that specific incident, but I heard something in there about a couple bottles of wine.
Yeah, I think I may have done that.
Yeah.
That's when he loaned us his power washer, though. I'm not sure what that was.
Yeah.
We have another neighbor who, of course, he has a tractor that he can plow the driveway, so he'll call me up and say, you might as well come over and plow your driveway. I think he just wants to go driveway. I don't know what
he just enjoys doing it. Yeah.
Now, I don't know how many people pay it forward in some manner or other, but that's always an option.
Yeah.
It used to be that when somebody new arrived in the neighborhood, everybody would take the cookies, not everybody, but some people. I don't know whether that goes on anymore or not. We have friends down the block who keep doing us favors. I think their kids think that we're a cute old couple, and I'm not going to argue as long as they do stuff for us. But I'm finally going to talk I have talked my darling daughter, who makes exquisite cheesecakes, into making one for them.
Yeah.
And I guess that's a way to encourage them, but I'm only trying to say thank you.
Yeah. Well, that's, saying thank you is an encouragement.
Of course.
Yeah. You may not, you know, saying thank you with the explicit intention of I want you to do more of that, that's not a thank you, that's a payment. But as sort of a general, we want to knit our neighborhoods together, Man, taking them cheesecake sounds good. You might pair that with a good bottle of wine. Tom can recommend something.
As a matter of fact, now that I think about it, these same neighbors, we asked the girls to shovel out our driveway and make it look like somebody was at our house.
Yeah.
Last January, when we were in fact in New Orleans for 2 weeks.
Right.
But then we went over to pay them what we had, I thought we had agreed on, and they wouldn't take the money.
Right.
And come to think of it, when Tammy and I went to Green Bay, I don't know how many of you ever been to Lambeau Field, but they have very steep stands. And this was built long enough ago that apparently they didn't have to comply with any modern legislation
codes,
that would have made them put in handrails.
Uh-huh.
So we were having a real struggle getting out of there because I assume both of you know that Tammy has a bum knee and I have a bum hip. And we decided to ask the kids down the row to go get us some food.
Yeah.
Because we hadn't realized when we got to our seats that was going to be a struggle. And we offered to pay them and they wouldn't say no, and we had a polite argument in which they finally agreed they would give the money to charity in their church.
Perfect.
But, yeah.
So those are all settings, situations of being neighbors, the kinds of neighbors that we want to see more of in the world, and the kinds of neighbors that you also get to be, right? So part of the way that you get to be even better neighbors is by being attentive to where that awesome neighboring happens. And thank the person, right? Not only because you want to encourage it, although it does encourage it, you want to encourage them because you know how good it feels to be thanked for something, right? Not because you're in it for the kudos, right? But because if you do something that you hope helps someone, if they then say, hey, that really helped, that means that you have accomplished what you were in it for, right? You were in it to help them, and you get the feedback that that was in fact helpful. So being, being affirmative of your neighbors when they do good neighbory things is actually it's a way to yourself be better neighbors, and you can thank them and you can thank God for them, right? So that's your assignment, not just for the week, because we're done with Neighborhood Church. This is your assignment forever, is to pray with thanksgiving for your neighbors, because they are where God has planted you.
I know it's time to go. I have one word question.
Yeah.
Is this all rooted in Jewish tradition?
It is rooted in loving your neighbor as yourself, if that's what you're getting at.
Well, no, I mean old Jewish tradition, Old Testament. I just don't
Which know. Is where loving your neighbor as yourself came
from. Okay, all right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Learn more about our mission at wdmcovenant.org.